Hello everyone and welcome to Ask Margot Today, our life advice show where you ask the questions to the sticky matters of life and I present you with hopefully just the right answer. I'm Margot de Coatsworth. My answers cover the three parts of our mind. One is the subconscious, where our programming has been laid down from the beginning of our arrival on this planet. The second is our conscious mind, which is all around the story we tell to ourselves and about ourselves, the words we use, and the transformational power of using words intentionally and not by default. My platform is, if you don't like what you see, then you need to be telling a different story. You can read my little free ebook under Change for Good on my website at margotunlimited.com if you want to know more about that. And then there is the superconscious. So the subconscious, the conscious, and the superconscious, which I see as a kind of canopy over us and a place where we can plug into a higher, greater source so that our lives are richer and better. And we don't feel like life is completely random or a crapshoot. I quite like that word. It's kind of like swearing without swearing. It means the luck of the draw. And I know we don't need to live like that. So that's the basis of Ask Margot. Really, it's to show people how to take up their own power to be the genie in their life. You are the genie because who else is going to grant your wishes if it isn't you? I've spent this last weekend working on a book I'm writing called You Are the Genie, which is really a kind of roadmap explaining how our words are instructions in life. And our genie is our subconscious mind, whose job it is to follow our instructions. You Are the Genie is really about not just possibilities or dreams or wishes, it's about how to make those possibilities reality in your own life. I'll let you know when I've finished with it, editing it, and then maybe I can read some pieces to you on the show. There's a quote I've got written in chalk on my wall. I've mentioned it before, and it's by Carl Jung. It says, until we make the unconscious conscious, it will rule our lives and we will call it fate. It's so powerful, isn't it? Every time I read or think about that, it just affects me deeply. Something or someone other than us deciding for us? I don't think so. We need to be aware. How do we make change if we're not aware? How do we make change if we don't understand the mechanics of that, the science of it, the connection between what's going on in our mind and what's going on in our world and in our body, in our lives? That's my mission. And the clarion call for that mission is, you are the genie, how to grant your own wishes. Food for thought, I hope. So, to our first question today. I spoke to someone the other day who is taking medication for anxiety because without it, they say they have a huge knot in their stomach. This is the second person recently who I've talked to about the same issue. This woman said to me, I take drugs for the chemical imbalance. And I asked her, oh, do you have a chemical imbalance? And she looked a bit taken aback. And I think was unable to answer that question positively. She was assuming she had a chemical imbalance. She hadn't had any kind of diagnosis. I think it's interesting when we hear that, we think, oh, that makes sense. Oh, I now understand. But I'm questioning, what is the difference between a physical imbalance and a chemical imbalance, a biological imbalance? An emotional imbalance, a mental imbalance, they're all areas where we are out of whack in our lives. Why would we think one of them can be dealt with more easily than another? Why do we look at a chemical imbalance and back off from saying, well, I don't like that and I want to change it. I suggest it doesn't matter whether it's physical, chemical, emotional, trauma-related, whatever. No matter how long it's been there, all of it is fixable. All of it must be fixable. Frankly, we're doomed as a people if we can't fix our stuff. We're not designed to live with such problems. We never arrived in this world with them. We added them along the way, at some point, whether consciously or not. We need to go back to that point, reset it, and watch how life changes for us. We are designed to fix the things that keep us stuck or feeling small or make us sick. From a higher perspective, an energetic God perspective, nothing is designed to make us subject to it. Nothing is supposed to work like that. We are here on this planet to be in charge. The Bible, which I don't usually quote, but possibly I should, says we have been given dominion in the best way possible. We are supposed to be the boss in our world, to be the controller, the director, the chooser, the instigator, all of it. We have been given this power as a right. We're actually born with it. We're designed to use it, and we just need to know how. The brain is chemical. The body is chemical. There are biochemical processes involved in mood and stress. There's no question about that. Chemistry, our chemistry, responds to thought and to environment. Chemistry responds to stress, to meaning, belief, safety, and purpose. Medicine is great, but let's also take some responsibility for managing our health and well-being. This means no imbalance, whether physical, chemical, emotional, or psychological, should automatically be treated as permanent. Everything in our human system is dynamic. Everything shifts. Everything must therefore be open to restoration. Otherwise, we accept a universe where the human being is fundamentally powerless. We have to stop that nonsense. You are not here to be managed by your chemistry. You are here to direct your life consciously, responsibly, intelligently, from the inside out. Many people who use the phrase chemical imbalance feel trapped and hopeless, and that state seems inevitable for them. These are the exact words I hear beneath the language: trapped, hopeless, and inevitable. When something is described as chemical, it sounds fixed, it sounds mechanical, it sounds like a fault in wiring that cannot be influenced. And when a person believes their state is inevitable for them, their sense of their own agency disappears. The mind and body are not separate systems running independently of one another. They are in constant dialogue and constant interchange, physical and mental. A thought triggers a chemical response. A memory triggers hormonal shifts. A perceived threat activates your stress response. A story we repeat over years becomes embedded not only in belief, but then in physiology. If someone feels a constant knot in their stomach, that sensation is real. It is not imaginary. The body is registering something. But the body is not an enemy. It's responding to signals and it's telling you something. Ask yourself, what is it telling you? Chronic worry elevates cortisol. Unresolved trauma sensitizes the nervous system. Repeated catastrophic thinking strengthens neural pathways associated with fear. And repeated catastrophic thinking, you guessed it, equals living in anxiety. Even the expectation of anxiety can prime the body to produce it or produce the effect of it. We're not passive observers of our internal states. We are participants in them. The body reflects the inner narrative we're living from. If someone believes deeply, I am broken, it's so hard to hear that, but I hear it from my clients, or this will never change, it's just who I am, the system organizes around that instruction, not as a punishment, but as an alignment to the internal belief. We are extraordinarily obedient to belief, but belief can be revised. You are not a fixed event. You are a dynamic process. Everything in the human system is in motion. Cells regenerate, neural pathways rewire, hormones fluctuate, emotional states rise and fall. There is no static state unless it's continually reinforced. No one needs to be stuck in a place they can't get out of. That feeling, trapped and hopeless, and that state is inevitable, is a perception and not a destiny. When you change perception, you begin to change physiology. When you change your story, you begin to change your chemistry. When you introduce new thought, new behavior, new environment, new meaning, your system must respond. It has no choice. That's how it was designed. This does not mean change is instant, sadly. It does not mean support is unnecessary. It does not mean medication is not relevant. It's just, let's not make it our first port of call. Let's make our own minds our first stop. And let's address imbalance right at the beginning and not leave it until the thing has taken a hold on us. You are not here to be overruled by your chemistry. And once you understand that the mind and the body are partners, not opponents, the word inevitable loses its authority. If you need help with this, as I realize it may feel just like theory, email me. If some of what I say is new to you, I hope you give it consideration. You know what they say about doing the same thing but hoping for a different result. That's just silly. Okay, our next question. It's interestingly a follow-on from our earlier conversation about love and respect. Juliet wrote in saying, I keep finding myself in situations where I complain about how someone is treating me. They're inconsistent, they don't prioritize me, they don't show up properly, fully, and yet I stay. How do I break that cycle? Well, this answer, Juliet, may be hard to hear, but it is true. What you are not changing, you are choosing. So choose wisely. That sentence is not about blame, it's about awareness. If you are repeatedly complaining about someone's behavior, their lack of consistency, lack of effort, their failure to prioritize you, I guess you're talking about a romantic relationship here, and yet nothing changes, then at some point you must ask yourself a more confronting question. Am I choosing this? Because if you continue to respond instantly, if you continue to rearrange your life, if you continue to make allowances and accept crumbs, then you are participating in that pattern. You may not like the pattern, you may resent it, but you are sustaining it. Intermittent reinforcement, occasional affection mixed with absence, is particularly powerful neurologically. It stimulates dopamine in irregular bursts, which can make the attachment feel stronger. The body becomes chemically bonded to the cycle. That's why it feels so hard to leave. It's not just emotional, it's actually physiological. But here's the good part. The same mind-body system that reinforces the pattern can dismantle it. When you set a boundary calmly and clearly, the body begins to experience coherence. When your actions align with your stated standards, your nervous system stabilizes, Self-respect reduces internal stress. That's where you get a knot in your stomach, because there's no longer a split between what you say that you want and what you tolerate. At some stage, the solution becomes very simple. Not easy, but simple. You say calmly and clearly, "This is what I expect. If that's not something you can meet, then this doesn't work for me." Sometimes the person steps up, sometimes they disappear. Either way, it's good for you. When behavior matches belief, your stress reduces. Let's go one step further. Life reflects a standard you consent to, not as a punishment, but as a resonance. If you repeatedly accept less than you desire, you are broadcasting that level of expectation. Life organizes around what you consistently allow. Remember, your genie is listening. When you raise the standard internally, reality reorganizes accordingly. Sometimes that means people fall away. Sometimes it means they rise to meet you. But change begins the moment you withdraw agreement from what diminishes you. I did this myself recently, and I immediately felt lighter and better once I had committed to making that change, even before I did anything about it. That's why awareness is the first step. Before you find the courage to say, "That's enough," you must clearly see what you are participating in. If I'm not changing this, am I choosing it? That question moves you right out of victimhood, where none of us want to be, and into your own authority, because that's what you're designed for. It's recognizing that you are not here to be at the mercy of inconsistent affection. I'm not saying this is easy. I've dealt with this more than once myself, because hope can be seductive, especially with romantic love. Fear of loss can be persuasive. But you are not powerless, quite the opposite. Ultimately, the power is in your hands. When you recognize you're choosing something, you also recognize you can choose differently. And when you choose differently, your life begins to reflect the new standard. I would be bold enough to suggest that if you walk away from someone because you know you are worth more, then that same pattern will not show up in your life again, especially if it's been a repeated one. And that's great. The bonus is that you are setting that person free to find someone else who resonates better with them. So everybody wins. Try that, Juliet, and let me know how you go. Our next question. Bob asked me why I react so strongly when people use the word "they," as in they're controlling everything. They don't want us to succeed, or they're responsible for what's going on in the world. Isn't it sometimes true that powerful forces are at work? Bob says. It is true. It's true that my antenna goes up on full alert the moment I hear someone saying "they" without being able to name who they are. Not because power structures don't exist, obviously they do. Governments, corporations, boards, institutions exist. But when someone cannot identify who they mean when "they" becomes a vague, shadowy collective responsible for their disappointment, their lack, their stagnation, for all they perceive as wrong in the world, then something else is going on. "They" becomes a psychological escape hatch or a cloak for helplessness. It reallocates power outside the individual and places it onto an unnamed, unchallengeable force. It makes us victims, and that's never any good. It's like when people say "all" in an absolute and sweeping way. All big pharma, all big business, all government. We can't possibly say all of any institution is wrong or greedy or selfish. It's far easier to blame an invisible "they" than to examine further. Blame feels righteous. Even within these big systems, individuals move, they build, they negotiate, they create, they want change. There are people everywhere who have honor and integrity. We need such people getting into power bases in the world to make change for good. History is full of people who operated inside imperfect systems and still achieved extraordinary outcomes. The moment someone says, they won't let me, I think, who exactly are they? Quite often it's the bank. I can't do that, people say to me. Who says so? I reply. Oh, the bank, they say to me. Well, maybe we need to find a way around that. Another subject, that one for another day. It's a bit like when people complain about the status quo and what's wrong, but they don't go the extra step to suggest an answer or a solution or a better way. They is often a cloak for helplessness, and I get that. We seem too small to affect change of something so big. Well, history shows us that that's where strength in numbers comes in. It really comes into its own. What you consent to repeatedly becomes your lived structure. If you consent to powerlessness, you will experience more evidence of it in your life. If you consent to authorship, being the writer of your story, you begin to notice openings, alternatives, routes that were previously invisible to you. This is not denial of reality, it is what's called conscious creation of it. I suggest we all remove the word they unless we can name it specifically. Who do you mean? Even then, ask yourself, how much responsibility is actually theirs? Often people expect the system to ensure they are provided for, but we must first check that we have done everything we can to be responsible for ourselves. Blame is never much use to anyone if you think about it, especially if it doesn't create change for the better. There's also something kind of intellectually lazy, or I would say ignorant, about an undefined they. The world is really run by a single faceless will. It's shaped by overlapping interests, incentives, human frailty, ambition, fear, and it's also run by vision, altruism, generosity, and caring. When we reduce that to they, we are trying to simplify something into a sinister whole. And that simplification may feel powerful, but it weakens our discernment and it replaces investigation with assumption. If there truly is injustice, then we need to name it, identify it, follow the thread, and try to fix it. Vague accusation diffuses clarity, and clarity is always a more worthy aspiration than blame. I do hear myself saying this, and I know that I don't always take action when I see something is wrong, so I'm challenging myself today with this as well. Firstly, to speak up, and then to do something about it. But this question is not about what's wrong with the world, because we know there are things that are wrong and that need to be addressed, and we know there are people wielding power who are not worthy of such power. My point really is that we must look to ourselves to check where our responsibility begins and stop casting faceless, sweeping blame on institutions we think to be against us. Ooh, that sounds quite heavy duty. Let's take it up a notch for our last question and leave that one as a bit more food for thought. Margot, someone once said, if you treat your spouse like you're still dating, you'll stay married. Is that really true? And what does it actually mean in a long-term relationship? I think there's great wisdom in that statement. I'll say it again. If you treat your spouse like you're still dating, you'll stay married. When people are dating, they are attentive. They listen carefully. They dress with intention. They plan. They ask questions. They notice small details. They're curious and generous with their time. They flirt and play with each other. Then something happens over time once commitment is secured. Effort relaxes, attention dulls, assumptions replace curiosity. and we begin to treat the person not as someone we are still choosing, but someone we already have. That shift can be dangerous because the human system responds to novelty and attention. When we feel seen, valued, and pursued, even gently, the body registers safety, significance, oxytocin, the happy hormone, rises, dopamine supports bonding, the stress response lowers, and connection deepens. You know how it is. Boys woo us, and we just go all gooey. Girls flutter their eyelashes at the boys, and the boys say, "Your wish is my command." But when we feel taken for granted, later on in a relationship, the opposite can occur. The body tightens, resentment builds quietly, and then it stacks up. Little things grow into something big, and emotional distance grows. When you date someone, you are signaling you matter. I'm choosing you. Marriage or partnerships require the same signaling. Dating is curious. Curiosity keeps a partnership alive because it acknowledges that other person is interesting to you. No one remains static. And the person you married 5, 10, 20 years ago has also grown. You need to know who they are now. If you treat your spouse as someone valuable, desirable, and worthy of effort, someone you continue to be committed to, someone who feels chosen and is continuing to be chosen, then you will get the response you want. Love does not disappear because time passes. It fades when attention does. Keep offering attention, and you keep the bond not just alive, you keep your relationship dynamic. That's our last question for today. Thank you for your fine company. And don't forget, if you have a question, you can send it to admin@coastaccessradio.org.nz. You're going to send it. If you have a question, you can send it to admin@coastaccessradio.org.nz or to me at margounlimited.com under the contact tab. Margo has a T. So let's finish as usual with the word, our message from the universe today. Always remember that I am the unchangeable one. I have no moods, no highs and lows, no changes of heart, no disappointments or foibles. I am utterly constant and steadfast. It is all of you who run about worrying, wringing your hands, huffing and puffing about what you do and don't see. Be like me. It's a better way. Thank you. Goodbye.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.